It's Morning Focus. We're here with you until 11 o'clock. Keep your comments coming. 086-1800-964. If you've got questions for Dr. Maura Finn, you can send those in now. She's with us in studio. Dr. Finn, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And thank you very much for joining us. You're giving out that you just missed Laura Brennan.
I am.
And you're right. No, no.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No. Really impressive girl. Yeah, wish you all the best of luck.
And I know it's something you're passionate about as well, the HPV vaccine.
Absolutely, yeah.
But she's going to make the message better than you or I could.
Oh, absolutely.
Together, you know?
And the fact that she put so much effort and energy into it, you know, it's just, she's astounding. She really
absolutely.
Is.
No doubt about it. We're talking about asthma, and we'll get more questions in from people throughout the next little while. But we'll start off with that. Is it harder for asthmatics at this time of the year because of the colder weather?
Yes. Not necessarily the colder weather as opposed to the viral load, you know.
Okay.
This time of year, you tend to have all the kind of the viruses which we, I don't know, there's people estimate that you're exposed to maybe 12 in a year, but they tend to be centred around the winter time, autumn, winter, early spring. So it that's more difficult. So one of the biggest triggers for asthma would be a head cold, simple viral infection. Most people get a snotty nose, maybe a little bit of a scratchy throat. A lot of asthmatics, if they're not controlled properly, will get a chest exacerbation. And that's one of the classic ways we diagnose asthma. When somebody says, my child, every time they get a cold, it goes down to the chest. You know, yeah. And if they say that, it is one of the kind of the warning signs that it might be asthma. So they do have a harder time. Now, some asthmatics actually are more allergic based, and they have a harder time in summer because of the hay fever component of it. But you know, most actually do badly this time of year.
And what is the link between asthma and hay fever? I mean, it's not the same condition.
It's not the same condition, but there is a link. Asthma really is hyper-reactive airways. So your airways are being stimulated by something external. So be it a virus, by cold air, smoke, really important trigger, environmental hazards. And it triggers the airways to overreact. So the airways actually, you can imagine it's a little tube with a kind of a spongy lining on the inside.
Sure.
So the lining gets all inflamed and oozy and causes kind of like a snotty substance, and the airways get tight as a result. So you have this kind of wet cough, but also tight airways. Allergies do something very similar, and typically in kind of the nasal airways and maybe your eyes, you know. So there's a connection there, but not all asthmatics have allergies, and not all allergy hay fever sufferers have asthma. So there's kind of a overlap.
Okay. With that in mind, focusing on asthma, because you're not going to have much hay fever in February because of the weather, I presume.
Yeah, and also because the pollen. It's not necessarily
the so to focus on asthma, it's about managing it more than treating
it's
it.
It's all about that. Well, I suppose the most important thing is the diagnosis of it. It's the most common chronic illness in childhood. And the diagnosis is very clinical, as opposed to there isn't a blood test, there isn't a, you know, people sometimes get a little thrown by that. They want to go, you know, how do I have a test for asthma? You kind of can't. Hmm. So what we do is we're suspicious of asthma when you have a child, like I said, who has every time they have a cold, it goes down to their chest. Or every time they run around outside, they start coughing or wheezing. Or at night time, they're coughing and are wheezing in bed. So these would be kind of the warning signs. And we diagnose it often by actually trying a trial of treatment and see how the inhalers work for them. And if the inhaler works, you kind of go, okay, that's what it is. Children can't do these breathing tests to kind of prove asthma. So, and it's most often diagnosed in childhood, although you can develop asthma as an adult.
I was going to ask it because one of the questions in is, how do I know if my child has asthma?
Well, this is it. So it's a discussion. It's about the history of the child's complaint and the chronicity of it. Is it going on a long time? Do they reverse? The most important thing about asthma is that it's reversible. So you don't have you don't have a cough or wheeze continuously. You have it and it reverses and it's back to normal. And that's what's really important. And that's why the treatment is so important, because once you start the treatment, you reverse it and it's back to normal. And people with asthma can enjoy a completely normal quality of life once they're treated properly and once it's diagnosed. But like I say, the diagnosis is of kind of a fairly fluid thing that's based on discussions and history and how the child actually reacts to the treatment.
A massive massive portion of Olympic athletes are asthmatic.
Yes, and I think that's really reassuring. It's great to tell a child that, you know. And maybe because
when they get older, they realise that the athletes are kind of helping their performance through it. I'm sorry.
There may be that too, but no, but there is actually, in the truest sense, there are a lot of, I have a lot of children who would have asthma and they play GAA.
Oh, that's true.
And you know, and they should see themselves as being as active a sports person as anybody.
I'm just at the top level. It's about it.
You're talking about the cyclists now, aren't you?
Some of the sports, it's about half of all athletes are asthmatics. Like, it's ridiculous.
Really?
But they just get the diagnosis and it means they can have the substance and improve their...
Well, what the substance is a bronchodilator. So what you're doing is you're opening up the airways a little bit. And I suppose from what you're talking about, you're hoping that the person can inhale
endurance
more oxygen,
athletes,
you know, and especially for long endurance sports, exactly. In the more common situation, the most often one that is used, and people would be familiar with, a blue inhaler, which is Ventolin or Salbutamol. And so that inhaler, and there's another version, is Atrovent, but Salbutamol is what we use most often. You take usually for children, you use an aero chamber, which is kind of a little tube, and you put the inhaler into the tube, and the child doesn't have to coordinate the movement or the... It's very simple. They just breathe normally. And the medication just opens the airways. It kind of relaxes them and lets them open. So you can imagine, you can just... air can come in. That is the treatment to kind of prove the illness. And also, if you're in trouble or if you're feeling tight or if you're going out playing sport and you need to kind of help yourself, whatever, you take that. But it's not the treatment as such. The preventative treatment is a far more important thing. Once the diagnosis is established, what we need to do is actually put you on a long-term corticosteroid inhaler, and that reduces this hyperactivity of the airways. So remember I was saying they're just overreactive.
Yes, yeah.
So it kind of calms them down a little bit and it stops them producing any more phlegm. And that's simply put, it's how they really work. And you would take that every day, morning and evening often.
Is that just the brown inhaler?
That's the brown inhaler. And there's different colours. There's oranges and stuff depending on the type. But that's generally, so we talk about the brown inhalers and the blue inhalers.
Should every asthmatic be taking the brown inhaler every day?
If they're incredibly mild, possibly not. But generally, if you have a diagnosis of asthma and if you have a number of incidents during the year, yes, you should be on a brown inhaler every day. And if you're managed properly, you would actually very rarely need to use your blue inhaler, because that means your blue inhaler means that you're in a bit of trouble. So if you're managed properly, you won't need the blue inhaler. Some people will take, as their management protocol, they'll take the blue inhaler first and then the brown inhaler. So that's a different, slightly different thing. But
that's in consultation with your doctor.
And very often you'll have people, you know, you'll have, especially with parents, they'll know that, you know, child's getting a bit of a head cold. They're normally on one puff of the brown inhaler twice a day. Head cold is coming on, and they give two puffs of the brown inhaler twice a day instead for a few days. And it can just stop that exacerbation getting a little bit worse. So parents are very savvy to it a lot of the time, and they know how to manage these little kind of extra triggers.
Lifestyle wise then, away from the inhalers, is there anything you can do to mitigate the issues?
The biggest, huge, most important thing is no smoking, exposure to smoke as well, avoiding all the triggers. So you can't, you know, obviously exhaust fumes, any kind of like toxic fumes at all. Smoke is the biggest one. If you have that as allergy, hay fever, a tendency towards asthma as well, you'd want to be very careful in the summer and washing and showering and all that usual thing. Dust is a huge thing as well, and dust mite. And so people with asthma usually would have kind of used all these kind of hypoallergenic pillows and bedding, and would kind of have wooden floors rather than carpets in a bedroom, no heavy drapes, or if they are, you know, make sure you kind of keep the dust down as much as you can. And animal dander as well, so cats and dogs in the bedroom, maybe not the best thing. I am a culprit there, so you kind of know your triggers, and the Asthma Society website is excellent, and it gives you really good guidelines on
this,
and would kind of give you all those sort of tips.
A couple of questions on asthma. I have other bits in as well, but I'll stick to these for now. Anne is wondering, what's the difference between bronchitis and asthma? Her son gets infections in his upper airways.
I wonder what age he is. She doesn't say, does she?
No.
If bronchitis is actually just technically is lower, so your your bronchus is the big tube. If you can imagine kind of your sternum, just behind your sternum, that's your bronchus. So bronchitis tends to be when you have an inflammation or infection in that big tube, and it would cause a productive cough usually. Can be acute very often. It's just because of kind of a cold or a little infection. You may need to have just a simple viral treatment or maybe even an antibiotic for it. Chronic bronchitis is a different thing. That's when you have this chronic productive cough, and it is a precursor to what we call a COPD. That is a different condition. It's very similar to asthma. It's treated in a similar way. Mm. There's different, slight differences. But it tends to be a diagnosis that you make in older people, and it is not reversible. So it's a different thing. So I wonder if Anna's kind of getting a little bit kind of cross lines about that. A younger person would not have COPD.
Okay.
And if this boy gets upper respiratory symptoms, that doesn't cause bronchitis. It would be kind of maybe a trigger for his asthma. So I'd say it's asthma he's dealing with. Oh, he's 15.
She just come back.
Oh, good girl. Okay. 15. I hope he's on an inhaler because he probably needs it. And if he does get a lot of upper respiratory infections and it goes into his chest, just increase the brown inhaler a little bit.
Okay.
And he might be able to kind of reduce the frequency of them.
Is there a typical age of diagnosis? I know you said it can be adulthood, so there isn't a limit here, but...
No, there's no limit, but it's unusual, and it's more unusual in adulthood. It is, I think there's 500,000 people in Ireland with asthma, asthma, so it's a big, big number. But most often it's diagnosed in childhood. And you see, I suppose it's been refined now over the last few years. You know, you can have asthma, the true diagnosis, or you can have kind of bronchospasm in childhood, or you can have chronic cough of childhood. They're all variations on the same thing, but a lot of those, they actually make it, you know, by the time they're 4 or 5, they no longer symptomatic. Okay. We'd very often have kids who...
Kind of young kids.
Young. You can't diagnose it technically until they're over a year. Really maybe a year and a half. But we're suspicious of it.
Okay.
And the inhalers don't work until they're over a year. So... we tend to diagnose this in the second year of life, and very often those kids will be fine by the time they're 5 or 6.
Okay. And just finally on asthma for now, we'll do a couple more questions after the break, but for now, can you get rid of asthma? Can you outgrow it? I don't know if it's ever cured. I don't know
you
the right
can
terminology
outgrow it. You can have people who never have a problem with it, and they... some of that is the element that they are older and their viral load is reduced. You know, as you get older, you've been exposed to an awful lot of viruses, and you've actually probably developed an immunity to all of them, so you're not having the same triggers. You may also be aware of the triggers that bring it on for you, so you've actually managed your lifestyle accordingly. It probably is impossible to say that it's gone, but you'll have people who it doesn't even occur to and they don't ever use an inhaler. But it is very important to know that asthma can be life-threatening, very rarely, but people do die of asthma. So it's important if you have it, and if it's brittle, we call it brittle when it's kind of tricky to manage, and if you have an exacerbation without really much warning, that you are very, very much on top of it and you stay on top of your preventative treatment.
One more, actually. Mary has had asthma for years. She's has a cough with a phlegm for a year, antibiotics and steroids 3 times. She's worried in case she's a more serious condition. Is that possible?
It's not that asthma itself will cause a more serious condition, but you know, she's used to having chronic respiratory symptoms and may ignore something else that's going on. I'd suggest at this stage she probably needs to have a chest x-ray, possibly a spirometry, which is where the lung function is tested, because you can have this crossover between asthma and COPD, and maybe she needs her treatment tweaked at this stage.
Best of luck with that, Mary. We'll have more in a moment. Keep your questions coming into us.
Gavin Grace, telling you the stories you might not be aware of, but should be. Morning Focus on Clare FM.
Dr. Morfin still with us in studio. If you've got questions, send them in really quick. We're going to rattle through a few of them, but we're not going to fully leave asthma yet because we talked about inhalers, Dr. Finn, but there's something else you wanted to mention as well.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, because it's not solely inhalers that you'd use. There are treatments, particularly for people who have a kind of a rhinitis, that upper respiratory nose kind of symptoms and allergy symptoms. There's a thing that actually kind of blocks the allergy. It's a thing called Singulair, and it can work very well for some kids. So it isn't the only form of treatment for it. So, you know, you tweak all these depending on response and compliance as well.
Okay. Marion gave us a call. She says her doctor told her she has polyps. What are they? What can she do about them?
Polyps are little fluid-filled, usually blood-filled bags or sacs, extra tissue. And they can be anywhere in the body. You can have uterine polyps, you can have them in your bum. You can have them in your nose. You can have them externally. They usually are kind of soft and, like I said, filled with blood. And they can be cauterized and taken off. If they're in the nose, does she say?
No. I don't know what you're saying.
If they're in the nose, they're often a response to allergies, actually. So it does connect to what we're talking about. Yeah. If you have this kind of very reactive airways, you can develop polyps. And nasal sprays, steroid-based nasal sprays, are very often a treatment for them. Obviously, very rarely, they can change into something more sinister, and they would be surgically removed then. But most often, they're innocent enough. Cervical polyps, like on the bottom of your womb, can cause bleeding. It's quite a common cause of irregular bleeding in women. They're common. It can happen anywhere in the body, really.
Okay. Yeah. Is it men and women?
Yeah.
I presume it would be. But yeah. Just a couple of instances you were talking about.
Yeah, no, I suppose they would be fairly frequent times that you'd notice them. But no, men would probably be more inclined to the nasal polyps. They'd make you snore.
I don't need help there. I don't need help there at all. I've got a lot about coughs and that sort of stuff because at the time of the year, that's not a surprise. Anna's got a chesty cough, blocked nose. Her ears are gone deaf. She's wondering if she might have an infection.
She may have had an infection, a viral infection that caused this. She's had definitely an inflammatory response in her upper airways. So her airways have just all reacted and filled up with the mucus that your airways produce when they are reacting. Okay, so that's the classic situation. The nose is gone, the sinuses feel blocked, might feel a little drip down the back of your throat, and then the ears as well. Now that's not your ear canals. It's nothing to do with wax or anything. That's fluid in behind your middle ears, and it does cause that kind of muffled underwater kind of sensation. It's quite unpleasant, but it's not dangerous. It tends to go in its own time, and steaming is really probably the best thing you can do first. And that Valsalva maneuver, you know the way I've described that before, where you close your nose and blow like you would in a plane?
Yeah.
Because that opens up the little tubes coming from the back of your nose to your middle ear and helps drain some of that stuff away.
Pinch your nostrils, blow down as hard as you can, and the air goes out your ears. That's why. It's not really what happens.
It shouldn't go out your ears.
No, I know it shouldn't, but you know what I mean? The pressure escapes that way and it pushes things out.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got very, very layman terminology for this sort of stuff, but people know what I meant.
It works, okay.
Just about. I'm glad you're here to fix me. And somebody else is asking about their child. He is four. He has an inflammatory cough or an inflammatory cough or something. Mm-hmm. It's not quite clear, but what can be given to the child in that case?
An inflammatory cough is the most often, the most frequent kind of cough. It's inflammatory because it's causing a reaction in the airways. Whether it was caused by a virus or a bacteria is kind of, in some ways, irrelevant. If it's bacteria, it needs an antibiotic, but very rarely does it need that. And a cough has a purpose. So if the child is coughing, the child is clearing the phlegm, clearing the fluid that's kind of building up. And unless the child is very distressed or it's going on for quite a long time, or if it's a regular pattern, you just see how they go. As long as they're not running a temperature and they're not unwell, I wouldn't be too concerned about that.
And that was from a parent, another person themselves trying to clear phlegm from their throat. What's the cause of it? Sounds identical.
And it could be any form of any inflammatory reaction. Very easy. And if it's just phlegm and it's clear and it's not, I mean, if there's blood in it, we worry. If it's very dirty looking or smelly, you'd worry. But very often you're coughing something up, it's white or kind of slightly creamy, and that isn't anything to worry about.
What is the treatment for glaucoma?
Oh, glaucoma is where you have pressure in your eyes, in behind your eyes, and it can be very serious, actually. It can cause blindness if it's not treated properly. So one of the tests that you'll notice if you go to any of the opticians now, they will not just check your visual acuity to see if you can see the letters in front of you or the numbers, they check your visual fields to see how you see in the periphery, but they also do this little thing where they blow a little bit of air against your eyelid, and that's checking for glaucoma. And the treatment generally is eye drops, actually. That's what you use for it. Very different forms of them, and they reduce the pressure in the eyes and reduce the fluid buildup. But it's very important if you have it. And it's family, there is a familial link with it. Sometimes, if you have family history of it, you should be more careful about it.
The person was asking if it can be treated in Ennis. If it's eye drops, that's at home, I would presume.
Yeah, absolutely. It can, of course.
GP?
Yeah. And the GP will probably refer to an eye specialist or the... it's kind of one of these things that is often treated in conjunction with another specialist.
Of course. So. I'll finish with this one. Nurses strike ongoing at the moment. Are you under pressure? Are GPs under pressure as a result?
I don't think GPs are under pressure because, really, I suppose, like the nurses in the GP surgeries are outside of that situation.
They're not on strike.
The hospitals are under pressure, and that will continue to be. And the more days they're out, the worse that will get, obviously. And it is going to cause a problem, but at the moment it isn't. And I would be very much in backing them and hope and wishing them the best of luck with it.
Perfectly reasonable. You got your GPs protesting as well today.
Yeah, I'm sure not many people are very interested in the GPs when the nurses are.
I hope they are. We were talking about it earlier.
Yeah. The issues are very real, and it is completely underfunded. And you have to laugh every time somebody talks about improving the health service. They always say, "Well, primary care will fix this," but then they just don't do anything about primary care, and that the joined up thinking is absent.
Must be frustrating.
Oh, incredibly so. Yeah, it really is. But you don't want me to start ranting on the radio, do you?
I don't mind. I think you don't want to go ranting on the radio, which is the other reason I'll stop it there. In terms of your own health at home, if you've got issues or concerns, then go look after yourself. And please do see your GP. Their advice is just that. But as I say, do make sure that you're okay yourselves. We'll talk with Dr. Morfin from the Ennis Family Medical Centre again in the very near future. Fernando, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Text Clare FM on WhatsApp now, 086 1800 964.
In association with the Tile Factory Ennis Diamond, specialising in your complete bathroom renovation.